And good evening.
Figa.
Hello. Good afternoon. Figa. Good evening, everybody.
Figa.
Hold on a second. David, what's going on over there?
Oh, I'm learning Italian.
Okay.
Viva la patata.
All right. Oh, I have no idea what David's going on about. Welcome back to Hoops HQ.
Well, put it into a translator.
All right. David's. All right, I think we're going to be out to one less person here because I think we're going to mute David already with the podcast.
We're about to lose our FCC rating.
That's in Italian.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. This is our July session podcast here at Hoops HD. We've got a very full panel. Let me quickly run through everybody that's here. Off to that side, we got Joby Fortson, Matt Sikowski over there. Down there, we've got muttering whatever, David Griggs. John Titel off the other side, way down at the bottom, John Salica, and on my screen, at least in the center square, Kyle Lamb. Kyle, welcome. It's been a while since we've seen you on one of our podcasts.
Why does Kyle get to be in the center?
Chad's saving the best for last.
Why is Kyle in the center?
I'm just looking for Shadow Stevens. He normally takes one of the boxes in Hollywood Squares, doesn't he?
Throwback. I think Alf and Whoopi Goldberg also had the center square at various times.
Okay. Anyhow, we do have a handful of topics we want to go through today, just kind of updating on what's been going on in the whole college basketball world. And I guess let's start with probably the biggest news, which is, and Joby, let me start with you on this, actually. You create our nitty-gritty rankings, and the NCAA came out with a change to what their team sheets are going to look at, not actually how they're going to – Maybe not how they're going to evaluate rankings, but what their team sheets are going to look like. And can you tell us a little bit about what you've heard so far? And
what I've heard so far, and I probably shouldn't be the one talking about our center square.
Right. I did this. Yeah. I did this. I complained. Yeah, they complained.
What they're basically going to do is doing a very good move, which is to create on the sheet itself. They already had listed road record and that sort of thing. They're going to basically stagger road wins, the groupings, that 25 through 50 that you always hear about, the 50 to 100 or 51 to 100, those sort of staggers that where you see the records associated with it will now be raised up, so to speak, for road to show if you're doing well on the road. You know, a road game versus number 70 is like a home game at versus number 50 sort of thing. And you'll be able to see on the team sheets themselves, they will see it as such. And and this is very important. And the reason why I mentioned it, and it's very important to me and for the Hoops HD process. I'm very proud that the nitty-gritty ratings I put together for a mathematical formula can get pretty darn close to what the committee predicts. Obviously, human nature is more accurate when you're an expert like Mr. Titel, but when you're looking at pure numbers, I'm proud to get 66 out of 68 and, you know, that those sort of numbers. The fact of the matter is I'm going to have to change it up because I base the nitty-gritty ratings on the team sheets because I think the committee leans like a crutch to these team sheets in a lot of ways. And I think that will change. And as a result, road wins, I do believe, will increase in power. Big road wins, your road record, again, will be more looked at and you'll get more credit for doing things on the road.
I think it's funny that you mentioned road wins here because after the NCAA tournament was announced, one of the major teams that actually got snubbed was Illinois State. Look at the series that they signed on with, and that's the Ole Miss Rebels. Mm-hmm. I don't have the RPI in front of me right now, but wouldn't they be about in the 60 or 70 range that now might be considered a quality road win?
Yeah, I'm going purely off it, but Ole Miss was like in the 50s, I think.
And they were good at home. And I occasionally will bring up the fact that I think it's impressive to win on the road, in my opinion. I think I've mentioned that a time or two.
So,
but I would like, and I'll let you, Chad, I think we need to hear from Mr. Lamb and why we might be seeing this change.
And that's why I want to go to be, because Kyle,
I did this.
You have been promoting a change very much like this for several years now. And do we actually have you to thank for this?
At least partially. I'm not going to take all the credit. I know David Griggs will try to take all the credit.
Well, I complained. They changed it. They did. I mean, I did this. I changed the tournament.
Okay, Chad. I think it's time to mute him now. All right. So a little backstory on this. So yeah. So let's go back to January.
I changed the tournament.
A lot of you probably saw that the NCAA was holding this statistical analytics conference, right, at headquarters in Indianapolis. And the goal of the committee here was to hold this conference and have a bunch of people, statistical experts like Ken Pomeroy, Jeff Sagarin, guys like that, they had in town, and they were trying to find out what these guys thought of ways to improve the tournament using statistical, you know, analysis, you know, like Pomeroy's ratings and ESPN's BPI, various ranking systems out there. You know, the NCAA was aware there was a big push nationally for them to incorporate more advanced analytics into the process. So what they were trying to do is find out, how do we come up with a ranking system to better analyze, bubble teams and better seed and select teams into the tournament. So one of the happy accidents here is during that weekend when this conference was going on, I happened to be in a Twitter conversation with one of the media guys that was invited to this conference to report on it. And I was talking about, how a good way of measuring road wins stacks up. And we were talking about the differences between beating, let's say, the 30th best team at home versus beating the 50th best team on the road. And I was pointing out how, you know, actually beating the 50th best team on the road is actually more impressive when you look at it from a points basis. And I had done a matrix that actually I had sent out to you guys a couple years ago. I had done a matrix that compared, you know, using 5 years of BPI data, how these wins and losses compare to each other. Like, you know, if you beat the 50th best team, you know, on a neutral floor, you know, how does that compare to beating a team on the road or at home? Well, so I mentioned this in our conversation, and apparently shared that in the room with David Warlock, you know, the NCAA tournament director. And so a little while later, you know, David actually hit me up on Twitter and started asking me more questions for
– Damn right I did. David hit you.
Wrong David. Go ahead, Kyle, though.
Wrong David, yeah. So Mr. Warlock, you know, I had chatted with him in the past, so we kind of I've traded emails in the past about some other subjects. So, you know, we kind of knew each other a little bit, but he was just asking me for some more information, and I just said – you know, here I did this analysis, and he was asking questions about that, and I sent him a copy of my work, and I just said, you know, if this is what you're trying to do, if you're trying to give more credit to road wins, and I would say, you know, right now on the team sheets in the process, the committee looks at four categories. You know, Joby referenced this earlier when he was talking. Basically, you know, you got 1 through 50, you got 51 through 100, 101 through 200, and then you got 200 and below. And so when you know, the committee is looking at these teams and they're comparing them to each other, they're looking at wins and losses broken down by these categories. So what I suggested to David, I said, you might want to stagger them based on, you know, the equivalence of, you know, how, you know, beating a team at home. You might want to, you know, shorten that category 1 through 50, and you might want to increase the category on the road. Well, sure enough, basically what the NCAA did is they went back, did their own analysis based on my suggestion, and that's exactly what they've done. So the first category is now 1 through 25 at home, 1 through 50 neutral, and 1 through 75 on the road. The second category is 25 to 75, 51 to 100, and then I believe 75 to 150, if I remember correctly. So anyway, they basically changed the categories just based on, you know, very similar to the work I had done and used my suggestions. So
yeah,
happy accident. I wound up having a big influence.
Chad, do we have a new team sheet that we can show on screen share right now?
No.
So everybody can see what it looks like.
Do we?
So Kyle.
No, we don't. Good job, everybody.
Sensational idea, though, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, now, Kyle, when the A10 gets 7 bids next year, well, you know you're to blame.
Yeah, right.
Well, they went on the road. They deserve the bids.
Well, whether Kyle actually single-handedly did this or at least maybe contributed a little bit, actually, I want to
I liked Kyle's tweets, and without those likes, yeah. I don't think Andy Warlock does anything.
Well, actually, what I want to do is actually turn over to our committee guessing expert here, one of the top experts in the entire country, John Tytel. And John T, do you think that these changes in the team sheets are going to affect the way you evaluate teams next year when you are predicting what the committee is going to do and making your brackets, or do you think it's going to end up, are you going to still be evaluating teams the same way next year yourself?
I think it has to change. If this is what the committee says is the law, then I'm going to follow the law like a good lawyer should. I think that the staggering is good because, like Kyle said, like you have to reward people for going on the road, and it's a better win, as it were. My concern is the amount of staggering. Like, I think the columns, it works out that a win over like the 31st best team in the nation, if you beat them on your home court, is in the same column as beating the 135th best team on the road. And by coincidence, those teams happen to fit into our little group. So based on what I was checking out on KenPom, a home win over Xavier would be the equivalent in the same column of a road win over Rutgers. So if any of you can look me in the eye and tell me with a straight face that those are equivalent level wins, you're deluding yourself.
Are you sure, though? Well, how many road games did Xavier win last year? And look at the teams that were outside of the tournament that beat them on the road.
And look how – and it is tough to beat Rutgers on the road as well. It really is.
That's the funny thing, because road wins, Xavier didn't have too many of them, but neutral courts, that's where they actually made their hay.
Yeah.
I have to agree with Chad here. Look at how many problems Rutgers has winning at Rutgers.
I'll tell you what. I think that I may actually be able to push away team sheet here. Let me see.
That might be a bit of a stretch, but I mean,
we can see it on the screen now also, David. This is the sample of what a team sheet looks like.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be this was before the change, so this was basically when.
Yeah, this is before the change. Nice going, Chad. Like, way to confuse everybody.
But basically what we're looking at here, I can kind of explain this. So you see there's in the middle section here, there's four categories, you know, 1 through 50, 51 to 100, 101 to 200, and 201 plus. And basically what this is doing is it's grouping all the games based on RPI into these four categories that a team plays. So now the difference is it's going to still look like this, but it's only, you know, home games 1 through 25 are only going to be included in the first column there on the left. And then anything from 25 to 75 is going to be included in the second column that now says 51 to 100. So that's basically what we're looking at here. For this year, it's good. One important note, for this year, they're still going to go by RPI, but they have actually mentioned some other big news that came out with this is they're going to secretly test their own ratings formula that are going to be more points-based, and they're also going to test a composite rating system that's going to include Pomeroy and some other ratings. They're going to try these for at least a year behind the scenes to see how they work out. And then in the future, they're planning on changing RPI and either use their own system or use a composite ranking system.
Well, Matt, let me bring you in here. We haven't heard from you yet. What is your thoughts on these changes? And what is your thoughts on what Kyle just discussed there of maybe, you know, we need to get rid of the RPI here?
Oh, yeah, we've needed to get rid of the RPI for about 10 years now. But I'm all for this. I think we're finally getting to a smarter way of evaluating these teams. And I think it'll put a better tournament. I think even more importantly, better seeding. Because I feel like selections of teams has generally been pretty good. Seeding, that's where I think we've gone haywire. And I'm hoping, yeah, like getting a much better formula than the RPI to rate these teams. And then putting the neutral and road components shifting around the team sheets, I think it's going to get much better evaluation. And in turn, I think it actually produce a much better tournament.
I actually have a serious question. Does this make the season better? Like, if you're going to value road wins, are some of these teams that stay at home and order and just go to the bakery and play cupcakes going to finally be compelled to go out and play some teams on the road? And are we going to see potentially more games like Indiana going to IPFW and how much fun that was, and what Virginia is doing and what Wisconsin has been doing, where they're willing to play some of the non-power fives on the road? Because those are great games to watch. Those are some of the better games to watch in November and December. Does this potentially create more of that?
Well,
I think it might, speaking from a school that does that.
Does it, yeah.
Virginia's going to VCU again this year.
Yeah.
And the fact is, more teams, I truly believe Virginia has gotten number one seeds, even though they lost to GW that year. On the road. Virginia has gotten maybe even higher seeded than maybe their talent level deserves, because they have scheduled very well, put themselves in a position, and they end up with a resume that is very attractive. I can't believe that Indiana, Virginia, and Wisconsin, a handful of teams you mentioned, won't be joined by at least some people. Will Boeheim ever do this? No. But the fact of the matter is, I think others will look to this and go, and especially with this change, and go, it might be just a handful. Might be just five teams or so. But that'll at least add to more Indiana IPFW games, Virginia VCU games.
Well, Joe, let me kind of segue there. I'm going to put up on the screen another thing here. This is our defending national champions non-conference schedule here. North Carolina. And for the upcoming year, this is their non-conference schedule. And you do actually see – now, it may be take a couple of years for the net effect here. But
they're playing Portland. That's the unfair thing.
They go sort of to Davidson. And they went to Tulane last year. Here's the thing about Roy Williams. If you're his friend, he's coming to town. They're going to Wilmington soon just because of who their coach is. They're at Stanford this year, a former assistant. They go to Davidson. They're playing them in Charlotte.
That's not really at Davidson.
But I have to highlight this for Chad, because it's just funny to hear the spectrum in Charlotte now as opposed to Philly.
There's the trip to Tennessee in there as well. They're playing Ohio State and New Orleans in the CBS Sports Classic. Tytel, what are your thoughts on our defending champion schedule here? Is this the way to schedule?
It was the way to schedule, so they should definitely get a lot of credit for facing tourney-caliber teams, both high-major and mid-major. As you can see, there's only two that are road games, and the one in Charlotte is not really a true road game. It's the only one at Tennessee. So even if you schedule good teams, quote-unquote, like at Stanford, Ohio State, if your only road game is at Tennessee, you're not going to get as much credit as somebody who goes on the road like Long Beach State as a extreme example, like for the entire month of November playing a murderer's row. So it's definitely in the right direction, and they'll get credit because there's a lot of games away from the Smith Center, but you're going to have to win some of them, be it in Portland or elsewhere.
All right. Well, let me go ahead and pull that on down here then. And David, if you're done speaking Italian also, I don't know if you are or not, but I'm going to assume you are.
Great place. Yeah. I got kicked out.
Chad, never ask the question. You're afraid to know the answer.
You're right. Let's start a couple other topics here, actually. And Matt, let me bring you in on this. There's a tournament going on right now, believe it or not, if you're a basketball fan. It's not that NBA thing. I think that's done and over with. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't really pay attention. But the TBT bracket, you've been following this, Matt, have you not?
Oh, yeah, I've been following along, of course, because Marquette's now 2 years in a row now lost to the Elite Eight, so two games away from playing for money, which feels like that's about what happens in real life, too, in the NCAA. But, yeah, that was
– Well, you say Marquette's playing it. Is it the Marquette's team for next year? Is that who's playing with it? Because, you know, I
– No. Okay,
so – Can you explain a little bit?
No, it's – it's Marquette alumni team. So you familiar names, Darius Johnson Odom, Jarrell McNeil, Dwight Bikes, Jameel Wilson, Devontae Gardner. So a lot of these Marquette names you heard over the late 2000s, early 2010s that were part of the great run during that. And sadly, we lost to Kyle's guys yesterday.
So, Kyle, your guys now, apparently, my understanding is the Ohio State alumni team is taking on Team Challenge ALS in one of the two semifinals in this event.
Yeah, correct. It's a winner-take-all $2 million prize. There's four teams left. They're playing in Baltimore. The semifinals on August 1st and the championship on August 3rd. This is the fourth year of this tournament. It's just called the Basketball Tournament. I know, a very creative name there. But as I said, $2 million prize. So the winning team, it's like a 10-man roster, including the coach. So the winning team takes home basically – Most teams, I think, have agreed to split ahead of time evenly, so you're looking at about $200,000 per player. But the Ohio State team has guys like John Diebler, Jared Solinger, Aaron Kraft, David Leidy, Will Buford. And then they've got a couple other former Ohio State guys and then two non-Ohio State players as well. But yeah, they're looking like one of the best teams in this tournament. It's got a really good chance of winning. There are a couple good teams left, though. Boeheim's Army, the Syracuse alumni team, actually came down from 25 points in the second half yesterday. Wound up knocking off the former, I guess it was the Kansas State players. I can't remember who they were playing. But they came down from
– Name the team.
Okay, yeah, they came down from 25 down in the second half and ended up winning. So they're also one of the teams here in the final.
Wait, where is this tournament being played?
The finals will be actually played in Baltimore, the last two rounds, first and third.
Well, that means Syracuse is going to have to leave the Carrier Dome.
Tytel, have you been following this event as well?
I have, not as closely as some of the other guys, but I love the fact, as a college basketball fan, unfortunately, a lot of times the guys I like seeing play in college are not good enough to make it in the NBA. And if they go to Europe, I don't have that on my TV package. But the chance to see guys like DeAndre Kane and Brandon Trish and Austin Day and even Greg Oden, these guys who are college stars, still getting a chance to shine, even if it's in this one-time thing that the winner takes all. So even if you're the second-best team in the country, you get nothing. But a team like Overseas Elite, I mean, Dewan Blair had a nice NBA career, but to join a team – after your prime and be the two-time defending champs where you're winning $1 million 2 years ago, $2 million last year, and chance for another $2 million this year, that's some serious cash, even for a former NBA guy.
And I want to say that this tournament, it's really quality basketball too. I went into this, like I didn't watch it the last couple of years. I went into it like I was skeptical, but I've watched a lot of games, and I tell you what, it's really good basketball. I mean, these guys are in still physical, you know, most of them are in peak physical shape. Most of them still play overseas, or if they're not playing overseas, they're still trying out for NBA teams. They're in really good shape. It's great basketball. I've been really, really surprised at the quality.
What's the size of the field? Like, how many teams are in this?
It's a 64-team tournament.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, if we kind of take the other end of things from the guys that used to play in college to the kind of the guys that are coming up into college, the USA under-19 team. Now, normally you hear about teams like this from USA – they're always winning whatever championships are out there. And they actually lost to Team Canada this year. Tytel, I think you've been following this event. Team USA lost in the under-19 semifinals there?
You believe in miracles? No, not anymore, I don't. Yes, Canada beat the USA in the semis 99-87. This is the under-19, so it's a mix. You've got your college guys like a Josh Okogie or a Carson Edwards of Purdue. You got your up-and-coming super frauds like Brandon McCoy, who I had the pleasure of interviewing a month or two ago. And then you have these high school guys who are going to be top lottery picks in the years ahead. Canada comes out ahead mostly due to 6'7 junior shooting guard R.J. Barrett, 38 and 13 boards for Canada. He's projected as possibly the top pick coming out of the class of 2019, so wait a couple of years. We also got to see some SEC guys. P.J. Washington is an incoming freshman at Kentucky, Austin Wiley at Auburn, both of them had double-doubles. So it seems that the SEC will be okay this year. But kudos to Canada and R.J. Barrett. I don't know if a star is born, but he had a great performance against a loaded Team USA.
Well, Matt, you follow a lot of the recruiting here. Is this a sign that there is a lot more talent coming out of Canada than there used to be?
Oh, yeah, you've seen it now. I mean, all the Oregon kids they've had. And now this kid, Andrew Wiggins. R.J. Barrett's like in that class. He was a well-known name before this, and now he's probably going to be number one or should be number one in 2019 and maybe even 2018 if Marvin Bagley reclassifies.
So, David, I'm just a little bit confused here. I thought kids in Canada played hockey, not basketball.
Right. Well, I mean, it was kind of surprising, but like – you know, John Calipari, good coach. I don't want to knock him, but if Tim Miles were coaching the U19 team, this never would have happened.
How did Team Italy do in this event, David?
I don't recall. I don't think they finished in the top two.
Okay. They did not finish in the top two. All right. I guess that there's a few other topics we do want to hit here. And Joby, let me start with you being our ACC guy. Grayson Allen, a little off-season surgery here. You concerned about him?
No. Well, I mean, you know, it was now it'll be interesting to see if he still trips people, considering it's a little weaker, you know. It's a little weaker now. But I think I'm surprised it's happening now as opposed to earlier. I've always wondered this, why people wait to have the surgery. You know, if when in doubt, go. But by all indications, he will be back. I think, you know, he's going to be able to be just fine. Duke's going to be just fine. And the fact, yeah, he's the guy who just won't graduate and leave. So, but I think Allen's going to be fine. Duke's going to be a solid team. They don't have the superstar lineup, you know, with Giles and all them this next year. But
well, something to keep an eye on there, Joby, is they've got a chance here of landing Marvin Bagley, who is the top recruit in the country, might be reclassifying, and if he does reclassify, I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, he could be eligible immediately for this season. If that happens, obviously that changes Duke's prospects a little bit.
Yeah.
And Salika, Limburg, you're in here. You actually wanted to bring up you got a note here before the show that you wanted to bring up a surprise pick you want to discuss for the SEC in the upcoming season. You have a team that you're really high on.
I know we're opening a big can of worms whenever this team is mentioned, but I think the Missouri Tigers are actually poised to make a big run. Because if you remember, I think it was Michael Porter Jr. was one of their recruits. He was initially supposed to go with Washington and Lorenzo Romar, but once Romar was fired, he was released from his commitment to Washington. And I think his brother is also going to be signing with Missouri.
It's wherever his dad or his brother. This is Beasley all over again. I mean, he's awesome by all accounts, but yeah, he's fine.
But in all seriousness with Missouri, they're actually going to have, I think it's a top 10 recruiting class coming in, so they will definitely have a chance to be competitive. But the problem with them is the SEC actually has gotten gradually better top to bottom, but it would not surprise me to see the Tigers as a bit of a dark horse pick to possibly contend for the NCAA tournament this year.
John and Chad, you guys are burying the lead on this Missouri issue. Since the last podcast we've had, I think the bigger news is the fact that Missouri is trying to negotiate with Kansas on renewing the Kansas-Missouri series.
Well, that needs to happen before anything else. I mean,
that's not even trolling, David. That is a real news story.
Kyle, we're not allowing that to happen.
Well, Kansas is. No. Kansas should really take them up on this offer. It's just one of the greatest things in the history of, human. Everything is this border war, and we need it back. And I am going to do everything I can. I'm going to go to Kansas maybe tomorrow to tell them that they need to play Missouri. Looking at their out of conference schedule, I think we can drop a couple.
All right, where's my mute button here? That's enough of that. Matt, you actually want to make a real comment about Missouri?
David going to travel to Allen Fieldhouse, steal Naismith's rules, and plant them in Columbia?
Actually, my understanding is the puppet has a new cell phone that's no longer allowed to make calls to Kansas, Missouri, or Nebraska area codes.
Yeah, for some reason, I kept getting blocked.
State legislators in those states have completely blocked the number entirely. It's not even up to individuals anymore.
I am boycotting Allen Fieldhouse until Missouri is back on the schedule.
Let me throw it to Matt though for real comments about Missouri.
The Missouri, I think the key is to whether they're a tournament team or not. I'll be first sharpshooting guard Cassius Robertson. He's a grand transfer from Canisius, who I believe a career 40% plus 3-point shooter. And then sophomore Kevin Purrier, who was probably the best recruit Commanders had signed. He'll be back, and now he's going to lose minutes because he's a front court player. So both the Porter brothers, Jeremiah Tillman, will probably be playing ahead of him. But still, a couple of key guys with past experience to blend in with all their newcomers.
Am I the only person that remembers that this was a team that won 8 games last year and basically beat nobody? Tytel, you're nodding your head.
Yes, I mean, if Porter is as good as advertised, he could be SEC Freshman of the Year, maybe National Freshman of the Year. but he's just one guy, even though he has a brother and a father. I think they're going to – I could see them going like 500 in conference, which might be good enough to make the tournament. But I don't think they're going to make a leap from 8 wins to 23 wins in 1 year, personally.
I think Porter's as good as advertised, but I'm not convinced this is going to be any different than Washington was with Markelle Fultz this past year. So,
well, I'll tell you what, the next – in the upcoming months here, we will start getting more and more into these teams as we get closer to the season and take a real look at this. But at this point, I think what I want to do is put us back up here in our Hollywood Squares style here. And run through each of you and any other thoughts you have, that topics we didn't hit on tonight that you want to hit on, or any other final thoughts for the evening. And let me start in the top left corner over here with Matt for the block. Oh, wait, no. Matt, go ahead.
Well, I'd say the one thing I've been as a recruiting person closely following in the Big East, how is Big East recruiting going? And after a little bit down 15 and 16, I think a pretty good class in 17 and 18, you already have 7 kids committed in the 247 top 100 composite, including with now, thankfully, Joey Hauser to Marquette yesterday. A little sigh of relief there that he's not going to Bucky Land. But I think this is key for them to be right along with the other 5 football conferences to be among there, the recruiting. So you've got 7, I think, already landed, and I think teams in good shape for another 4 or 5. This is your key. I think 10 to 12 top 100 kids per year is where I think the conference will need to be, somewhere in that 2 to 4 range overall.
Good point. Joby, any thoughts from you?
We didn't talk about it. We talk about it at almost every other summer-oriented time. NCAA tournament, infractions committee. When are you going to come down with a little North Carolina Tar Heels? I mean, it's the – the story that just keeps on going, and it's very interesting with Bradley leaving. You have to wonder, I mean, they haven't had necessarily the recruiting classes that North Carolina is used to having. They're still ones that most schools would trade, but not to the level. They have some really nice pieces coming back next year, but how will our defending national champions do if the NCAA happens to come down hard? Or will the NCAA come down hard? There's a lot of things in flux. I mean, I know the NCAA has a little thing to do in Mississippi right now, checking out phone records. But you're familiar with the football side of things. But it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. We've debated the topic. I'm personally appalled when academics are involved, because it is student athletes, but I know we have differing views on the panel over that.
All right. Well, let me go to the second row here, Titel.
So every year we have seniors who leave the sport to go overseas or to the NBA or to do the fifth year as a grad transfer. One of the things we rarely see, at least I don't recall seeing too much, is that they go to another school as a grad assistant. And one of them caught my eye a couple weeks ago. Travis Ford, who's the head coach at St. Louis, brought in Phil Forte III, who he recruited to play for him at Oklahoma State 4, 5, 6 years ago. It seems like Phil's been there a while. I find it fascinating because Forte is a short guy, great shooter. I would argue that he's now the best shooter on St. Louis, with Coach Ford a close second. Hopefully they can teach the other guys who actually have eligibility how to play. I think it's a nice fit, because I could see Forte becoming a great coach. And I think that I don't think they're going to, like, win the A-10 or anything, but it's nice to see a guy realizing what his limitations are and where his future is, and I wish Phil the best of luck in St. Louis.
All right, and now, John T., let me stick with you for one more second here. A second final thought here. We actually lost somebody very recently, a legend, John Kundla, and I know you mentioned this in the notes before we got on the air. Forgot to hit it, but a former Minnesota Golden Gophers coach for, what, about 10 years or so as well. Just any thoughts on that?
Yeah, John Kundla, for those who don't know, he's well before our time. I believe he coached the Minneapolis Lakers, as you can see, when they were in Minneapolis in the 50s. He won 6 pro titles in a 7-year span, not just NBA titles, because back then they were transitioning from the BAA to the NBL to the NBA or some form like that, with the great George Mikan and other players. Then after having this amazing Hall of Fame caliber pro career, he goes back to the college ranks to the Gophers, staying in Minnesota, where he coaches them for a decade. And that's pretty average, about a .500 coach. So I was happily surprised to see that he's actually a member of the College Basketball Hall of Fame, because it certainly is not for being a college coach. He made his bones in the NBA as one of the best NBA coaches ever. Died, I believe, at age 101. So our condolences to the family and a celebration of the amazing life and career of Coach Kunla.
Yeah, yeah. Three consecutive NBA championships. Very few coaches did that, but he did. But let me go to our center square there, Kyle Lamb.
Well, the rhetorical question, when does back page news become front page news? Well, the answer is when a Michigan player transfers to Ohio State. And that's what happened here with Andrew Dockich, son of ESPN commentator Dan Dockich. And, you know, this warms my heart when it turns his life around like this. It really restores my faith in humanity. So, this is a really big story.
Oh, geez. Dave, let me skip on down to Stalika, and David, I'll finish with you last.
This isn't so much as a final thought, but it is more of a suggested Twitter follow. If you've been following for the past couple of months, we have an account at 350 Jerseys for Hope under the name Brian Black. This is actually anti-epilepsy, and if I'm not mistaken, he has actually received jerseys from over half of the Division I teams right now. And it looks like on my screen we have Ball State and USC as some of the recent schools that have been happy to share jerseys. So we wish this gentleman the best of luck on his collection.
Yeah, if you are not following Brian, definitely you should be following him. It's a great crusade. He's out there trying to fight epilepsy, and so our thoughts are with him. I've actually been in touch with him a couple of times. Wanted to see if we couldn't even get him on one of our podcasts here in the upcoming months here. So we're working on that. But David, let me throw it over to you.
I'm actually very happy with what the NCAA is doing. My biggest gripe is they don't look at all the variables of how hard certain games are to win. And certainly the team you're playing is a big part of it, but where you're playing them and sometimes when you're playing them is also a part. Like, a team may not be a tournament caliber team, but they might be 5-2 against tournament caliber teams at home. And if you go there and beat them, you deserve more credit than teams typically get. I've been kind of saying that all along. And I think that up until the time Greg Shaheen left, the committee did a really good job of evaluating not just who you played, but everything about the game and how hard or easy it was to win a game when evaluating the teams. I think we've kind of gotten away with that, but with the changes to the team sheets, at the very least, I think that at least the committee is aware of that now, and hopefully it takes it into account. And hopefully, like, it bleeds down into the season as well, where we start to see teams willing to schedule some of those road games against the non-Power 5 that typically don't get them, because there is something to be gained from winning a game like that.
I agree with you, and hopefully we'll see it. We're not going to see it this year, but in the next couple of years, hopefully we'll see the scheduling change. But I guess on that note, on behalf of all of our Hollywood squares here at Hoops HD, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we're going to talk to you again real soon.